The third case of the day, Cape & Sons versus Strew Construction. Mr. Flynn, you're a switch hitter today, right?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your Honors, I have the pleasure of representing James Cape & Company. And James Cape & Company was one of the oldest paving contractors in the United States. I believe it went back to the late 19th century. And now it's in receivership, it's out of business, and it's gone under. And it went under because it was put out of business by the bid rigging of the defendants. There's a very discreet issue before this court, and that is, are the pleadings sufficient in this case? Is Cape's complaint sufficient to survive a motion to dismiss, giving Cape the full inferences, the full credit for anything that's said in it, all favorable inferences in its favor, so that can the court say at this juncture that there are no set of circumstances we could prove that would give rise to relief? And that really is the issue in front of this court. It's a pleading issue. Now, Your Honor, I think the nub of this is actually set out at page 6 of my opponent's principal brief, the Strew brief. And I'm going to read one sentence from it. It says, quote, Cape doesn't allege its own bids were altered or affected in any way. Cape doesn't allege its own bids were altered or affected in any way. Your Honor, that is not true. We have alleged 16 times in our complaint, 16 instances, we allege that all defendants, including Dan Bowden, the faithless employee of Cape who had been corrupted by our competitors, agreed to submit rigged or complementary bids. Now, rigged or complementary bids. Your Honor, the response to that, because Mr. Bowden entered into a plea agreement. He was the so-called cooperating witness, the CW, in Agent Gore's affidavit. When he finally pled, which was after I filed the complaint, his plea agreement has a very interesting statement in it that corroborates our complaint. It says, quote, Bowden would cause rigged bids to be submitted from Cape's offices in Racine. Now, I didn't draft that. That was drafted, presumably, between the U.S. attorney and Bowden's lawyer. I mean, they both agreed to it. The judge signed off on it. So what I'm wondering is, what is the response to that? This court can take judicial notice of that. We put the other plea agreements in here. It's not contested by the other side. The defendant's response is this. Rigged means true. In other words, that must have meant that Bowden sent Cape's true bids to Madison. Well, you know, rigged doesn't mean true, Your Honor. I mean, I remember reading 1984 and some of that sort of thing went on in the Orwell novel. It was fiction. Rigged means false. Rigged means untrue.
So what Bowden was passing on was untrue?
Yes, to the state. What he did, Your Honor, was this. He was responsible for the cost estimates on a number of Cape bids. He would inflate the cost estimates, which obviously then inflates the bids because cost estimates are a big part of the bid, and then that would be sent to Madison. He would then say to the others what that overall bid was going to be. And so they would then come in under by a whisker, $1,500 on a $650,000 bid, $45,000 on $1.5 million. And what I believe the lower court focused on and what I believe opposing counsel focuses on is the business of telling them what our overall bid was. Well, our overall bid wasn't a true bid. It wasn't our bid. It was manipulated. And I refer this court's attention to the Hammes case. The Hammes case, I think, is exceedingly important in this for several reasons. One of them is, and I really like this quotation quite a bit, it's 33 F3rd 774, where there was a question about whether something had been adequately or expressly alleged. And the response is, so what? Sick. So what? The federal rules of civil procedure do not require the plaintiff to plead the particulars of his claim, with the exception of fraud. And then elsewhere, this court in Hamas said, with respect to antitrust injury, and that's the nub here, did we plead enough to get by a motion to dismiss on antitrust injury?
Or too much?
Well, you know, and that's an interesting question, Your Honor, or too much. And I'd like to address that head on. We alleged 16 times that all the defendants, including Dan Bowden, submitted rigged bids. Now, let me ask you this. If we had said Dan Bowden submitted a rigged bid, I don't think anybody would dispute that that was adequate. To use the plural, defendants or conspirators, I'll give you another good example in the Gore affidavit. I would like to refer the court's attention to four paragraphs of the Gore affidavit. This isn't me. This is the agent. Paragraph 44, cooperating witness, Bowden. This is in our complaint. We attached it to our complaint. Admitted submitting rigged bids. 51, they exchanged cost information. 52, they discussed bid numbers for line entries and total bids and agreed to manipulate their bids. Not manipulate these defendants' bids other than Bowden, their bids. And then 63, the conspirators rigged bids. Now, I think it would smack really of 19th century pleading if we were told, and especially since we're entitled to inferences from this complaint, if we were told, well, you can't just say the defendants or conspirators, even if it includes the target guy that we're worried about here, you got to rename them. I don't think that that's required, and that certainly wasn't our understanding. Even in the Strew plea agreement and in the others at paragraph 5, all conspirators submitted complimentary bids. Your Honor, I think we have the right to go to discovery to be able to show. We're only asking for discovery. We're not asking for judgment. But we don't think we pled too much. You know, out in the hustings practicing law, and everybody in this panel has practiced law, you're going between a rock and a hard place deciding how much to put in or how little to put in. If you just come roaming into court and say, we have, quote, antitrust injury, and say very, very little, there are people who will throw you out of court. So here we felt that we did put in enough. I feel we put in enough, saying that the defendants rigged bids. Rigged means something, and it doesn't mean true.
Well, of course, your rigged bids, you would imply at least that it injures the consumer.
That's true, Your Honor.
And CAPE is what in this? It's a victim, but what is it?
CAPE
is
a competitor.
Is it a consumer or a competitor?
It's a competitor, Your Honor. Yeah. But I refer, Your Honor, to Hamas. And on antitrust injury, in the Hamas case, it says that the defendant's next fallback argument is that Cooksey has not alleged antitrust injury. But the whole thrust of they said no, that isn't true. And they went beyond it. And here is the antitrust injury. Here's the antitrust injury. It's not just the money that they obviously cost CAPE in driving it out of business. They excluded CAPE from competition. They excluded a competitor from competition. They didn't give CAPE the chance to compete. That's the antitrust injury. And that is something that is actionable.
Right, but that's something that wasn't specifically pled in your complaint. That's what you're arguing now.
Well,
but you didn't specifically say it caused injury to the plaintiff by eliminating market value lower bids. That wasn't in your complaint,
well, Your Honor,
was it?
With all respect, we said in our complaint that Dan Bowden rigged our bids, and
I
he
understand,
didn't have our third.
But yeah. I'm saying that language, which I agree with you, if that language had been in there, you would be golden.
Well, I guess what I would ask is for at least inferences from this complaint. I'm not sure. You can always come up with a phrase or two that if I were writing my closing argument to the jury or if I were writing a summary judgment brief, you can put into a complaint. But have we pled enough to put the other side on notice? This is only notice pleading. It is quite clear in Hamas that we're not required to give more than notice pleading. Have we given the defendants notice?
Well, here there was the defendants moved to dismiss on the grounds of lack of an antitrust injury and pointed out what they thought were the deficiencies, and there was no amendment, was there, to the complaint?
There was no amendment to the complaint.
To specify how the company insider purportedly artificially raised the plaintiff's proposed bids?
Your Honor, with respect, I don't think we have to get into all the factual details. In other words, part of that's going to be in discovery. In other words, the exact jobs, the exact amount, who else he was working with at the time. I don't know all of that myself right now.
No, but I'm talking about what you would know, which is that this affected your proposed bids. In other words, that your bids were artificially raised as a result of this conduct.
Right. Well, I think rigging, I think I'm entitled to an inference from the word rigging, and it doesn't mean true. That's not, there's nobody in this courtroom or this building that thinks that one inference of rigging is true. Nobody. And so the fact of the matter is, I asked for the inference from the word rigging to mean manipulated, and does anybody think that they manipulated them down to benefit us? No. And so I'm asking for the inference. I mean, in other words, I'm asking for the plain meaning of the English word. It's more than an inference. You can always find synonyms that you could add to a complaint. But at what point, under the liberal rules of notice pleading, do we say, counsel, you said the bids were rigged by your guy, corrupted by them, and you suffered injury? At what point are we entitled to the benefit of the English language? That is the question in this case. At what point do we have to say, when we say defendants, we just want to remind the reader that we also mean our guy, Bowden, who is corrupted, which, I mean, this is a long complaint, and we've referenced the entire complaint. Your Honor, the rig bids, they were rigged. They were submitted, rigged from our shop as well as everybody else's shop, and we were driven out of business. So what I would simply ask is, let us have discovery. We believe that this is sufficient notice. There's no question, or in the alternative, Your Honor, let us amend at this point. We did actually, in our briefs below, ask the court for leave to amend if, in any respect, he felt it was insufficient. It was not a separate motion, but this leads to the RICO matter. And this is another question. I've cited the Lockheed and the Boeing case to your honors. It requires the conduct of an enterprise through a pattern of racketeering activity. The only issue here is conduct, and that means some means of control of the core functions of an enterprise.
Department of Transportation?
The Department of Transportation.
That's the enterprise.
I'm sorry?
That's the enterprise.
In the complaint, that is the enterprise.
Doesn't our case law require a lot more for you to use the Wisconsin Department of Transportation to show that it was the enterprise? I mean, we don't have a situation where it was a bad actor in that department. I mean, wouldn't the real enterprise really be Vinton or Strew, one of these companies that was involved in the scheme? That to me would be the enterprise. I mean, there's nobody on the inside at Wisconsin Department of Transportation that was operating or managing the enterprise for purposes of RICO.
There's an associated, in fact, enterprise as well as the DOT. There's no question about that. But I'd like to focus on the DOT for a second, because that was what we've discussed in our briefs. And the fact is that you have a decision to make, and let me just pose it to you, and I think it's a very interesting decision. Do you require assent and culpability of somebody in the victim agency or company, albeit a faithless person, a bribed individual? If you require that, if you require a human being, we don't have that with the DOT. In Lockheed, they didn't require it, and for a very good reason, because what matters is the core function of the enterprise being corrupted here, and it is being corrupted here.
But how do you show? I agree, you don't necessarily have to have an insider, but the key, I think, is showing sufficient control over the Department of Transportation.
Well, Your Honor, two things on that. For 7 years, they did it, and they got away with it. And the second thing is, there's a case in this circuit, the JTC Petroleum, 190F3rd 775, where Judge Posner states, there's a long history of bid rigging and related practices of collusion in the road construction and road maintenance business. The truth is, if this court is going to permit a private attorney general to do something, this is the case for them to do it. The entire crowd on the other side went to prison. We've said that they rigged our bids through our employee. We've said that they have in effect corrupted the process at the DOT. We're not saying the DOT is bad, but I don't think we have to say it's bad.
Well,
thank
but
you.
Under the Reeves Supreme Court case, when the court looks at that language, the defendant has to have been, or the enterprise, someone in the enterprise had to have been a decision maker, a high-level manager, or an outsider who exerted some kind of influence or control over business decisions. And we don't have that.
The outsiders were Vinton and Strew, who did it through a computer. That's the issue. In other words, if you require a human being, there isn't.
But the issue is exerted significant control. Isn't that the critical language?
Yeah, I agree. And there's no more significant control than dominating the bids for 7 years. And the alternative, we ask for leave to amend to put an associated, in fact, enterprise. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Apfel.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the complaint in this case was not dismissed for failure to plead with particularity. It was dismissed because the facts it did plead do not show antitrust injury. Let's turn to the actual complaint and see what is alleged. This is the guts of the complaint. In paragraph 29, CAPE alleges that as a result of last-minute calls from Bodwin to Strew and Vinton, some Strew and Vinton bids were lowered at the last minute so as to guarantee the award of the project. That's paragraph 29. Paragraph 31 alleges that defendants James Maples, Michael Maples, Ernest Strew, and John Strew were able to and did adjust the bids of their respective companies downwards or upwards upon receiving information through the scheme of competitor bid information. Paragraph 32 says that those defendants were able to submit inflated bids on projects that they, that is, you know, our defendants, knew would receive pursuant to their schemes. And in both paragraphs 91 and 98, which are the operative paragraphs for both the federal and state antitrust claims, it is alleged that the defendants prevented James Cape from winning bids by revealing to Strew Company and Vinton Company in advance the bid James Cape was going to submit. These are highly detailed allegations. Detailed allegations that were made with the benefit of criminal complaints, pleas made in federal court, and with the benefit of CAPE's own knowledge of its own business. Nothing in this complaint indicates in any way, shape, or form that Dan Bodwin, the insider at CAPE, raised or otherwise manipulated the actual bid submitted. What he did was simply pass information on. Now, that being the case, the allegations that are pleaded simply do not establish antitrust injury, which, as we know, is the sine qua non of an antitrust case. There are two things, two mechanisms, two ways by which CAPE suffered injury. Number one, the Strew and or Vinton's bids, which otherwise would have been higher than CAPE's and hence would have lost, were lowered at the last minute to come in right under CAPE's bid. Conversely, Strew and or Vinton's bids, which were lower anyway by a lot, were raised to just below CAPE's bids so that they could extract more profits from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Those are the only two mechanisms alleged in the complaint by which this scheme operated. Neither one of those establishes antitrust injury to CAPE. Let's look at each one of them. The first instance, the defendants would have lost. They came in under CAPE. There is no anti-competitive effect. Lower prices may have been calculated unfairly, but there is no harm to the marketplace. And the cases are clear, and I would submit that CAPE tacitly concedes that that is the case. It may be wrongful under some other theory, but there is no antitrust injury for lowering prices. let's take the other mechanism that is alleged, where the defendants raised their price, what their bids otherwise would have been, to just under CAPE's price. In that instance, there is an anti-competitive effect. The market pays a price for that. But the injury is not to CAPE. Because what would have happened but for that manipulation? CAPE would have lost the bid. It wasn't the low bid anyway.
What about the inflation by Budin of the bid of CAPE?
Well, there is no.
If there's an alleged conspiracy.
Well,
is that a third matter to be concerned?
Are you asking me to assume that which I firmly believe is not alleged in this complaint?
Well, I understand that's part of your argument, and I appreciate that. Of course, the other side feels that it's somehow pled in. Indirectly, I guess, is the way to put it.
Well, I would submit that...
I mean, that's their argument.
Indirection is the most charitable characterization. So if I were to assume, for purposes of argument, that in black and white they said Daniel Bodwin came in, manipulated the price so that the bid CAPE actually submitted was higher than the bid that it should have submitted through some way. There are a number of obstacles to this. Keeping in mind, of course, that I do not for a moment concede that it was actually pleaded.
I reckon.
Okay, first, I don't think that alleges antitrust injury. Now, counsel for CAPE says, well, of course, no one would deny that. Well, I'm afraid I do. I take issue with that. To understand that, you've got to understand that to have an antitrust injury, it is not sufficient merely that the injury flow from acts which violate the antitrust law, but that the injury itself be the sort of injury the antitrust laws were intended to protect. And the antitrust laws, of course, were intended to protect competition and not necessarily competitors. Now, let's look at, in that instance, what happens? Well, what are CAPE's damages? Remember, we've got a CAPE's bid that should have been and CAPE's bid, losing bid, that was. Well, but for this manipulation, CAPE would have, we assume, won the contract. And it would have recovered the lost profits, if any, on the bid that should have been. Those lost profits would have been paid by the consumer in any event. In the absence of any anti-competitive behavior, they would have been paid by the consumer. They're contract damages of a sorts to CAPE, but they're not antitrust damages. Conversely, again, in that situation where CAPE's bid was raised and someone else's bid came in, what would the market's damages have been? The market's damages would have been the difference between the price they would otherwise have paid, that is, CAPE's bid that should have been, and the winning bid that was of one of the competitors. And under no circumstances would CAPE be entitled to recover that quantum of it. So CAPE is simply not suffering antitrust injury in the sense that it has been defined by this court. Now, again, keeping in mind that this wasn't pleaded, and I don't believe it's fairly before the court, there would nevertheless be additional obstacles. Because antitrust injury is only one half of the inquiry of antitrust standing. The second half of the inquiry is whether the plaintiff is an appropriate person to pursue the antitrust claim. Now, this is an Associated General Contractors argument. Now, there are a number of factors involved in Associated General Contractors, and I would focus upon the complexity of apportionment of damages as well as the overall appropriateness of the plaintiff to pursue those antitrust damages. And if I could paraphrase the Associated General Contractors decision, the existence of an identifiable person or class of persons whose interests would normally, in the normal scheme of things, be, to motivate them to vindicate the public interest, they're the ones who should be carrying the flag into battle. Now, it is well accepted that competitors are not generally regarded as having interests completely consistent with the consuming public. Their interests are to raise prices. The consuming public's is to lower prices. So there's a certain presumption against this. But Mr. Flynn has argued, he's used the rubric of the private attorney general and seeked to cloak himself, or his client, rather, in that function. But I ask you, in this situation where you have damages that frankly are not antitrust damages at all, and you have not merely a potential attorney general, but the attorney general himself, who not only can but has come in and acted on behalf not only of the United States government in the enforcement of the laws itself, but acted on behalf of the party who actually suffered the antitrust injury, that is the state of Wisconsin, what justification is there for allowing CAPE to go in and seek to avail itself of the antitrust laws? I would submit that there are none, and that certainly, on the basis of the facts as alleged, there is no antitrust injury, and frankly, even on the basis of the allegations we are asked to assume, there's no such injury either. If your honors have no further questions on the antitrust issues, then I will defer to Mr. Erlinson, who will speak for the remainder of the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Erlinson.
May it please the court. Thank you, your honors. My name is Andrew Erlinson. I will address the RICO issues on behalf of the appellees, the Vinton defendants, and the Strew defendants. We would ask that the court affirm the circuit court's dismissal of CAPE's RICO claim because it properly held that the complaint failed to plead facts that would demonstrate that these defendants participated in the operation or management of the only alleged RICO enterprise, the Wisconsin DOT. Now, the complaint alleges a claim under the RICO statutes, specifically Section 18 U.S.C. Section 1962 sub C, which renders it unlawful for anyone employed by or associated with an enterprise engaged in interstate commerce to conduct or participate indirectly or directly in the conduct of such enterprise's affairs through a pattern of racketeering activity. As this court has established a four-part test for pleading a claim under Section 1962C, you have to allege and prove the conduct of an enterprise through a pattern, fourth, of racketeering activity. Now, this case boils down to whether CAPE has pled facts which would demonstrate that the defendants conducted the activities of the alleged RICO enterprise. And as Your Honor correctly pointed out, this case turns on the United States Supreme Court decision in Reeves versus Young, in which the court adopted and approved an operation or management test, which requires proof that the defendant did more than merely participate in the activities of the enterprise. Put another way, CAPE must demonstrate in its complaint that the defendants played some part in directing the enterprise's affairs. Now, the Supreme Court clearly, in Reeves, acknowledged that Section 1962C liability could extend to outsiders who exert control over management or operation of the enterprise's affairs. And generally, outsiders direct the enterprise's affairs in one of two ways, either bribery or infiltration. But the question is control of the management or operation of that enterprise's affairs.
Well, if you make the control a nullity by outside manipulation, what control is left in any institution? In other words, how can WISDOT, did they ever call it WISDOT?
I did until I got here today, okay. And people started calling
it
DOT.
If you make what they're about a sham, would that satisfy the mandate of the Reeves case?
It wouldn't, because in that instance, the wrong that's redressed is a fraud, but it's an external fraud. And as the U.S. Supreme Court recognized in Reeves, and as this court has recognized in U.S. versus Cummings, Section 1962C RICO liability is in many ways all about the means that the wrong is achieved, because it is the infiltration of legitimate enterprise that is the subject of the RICO statutes.
Right.
And simply being an outsider defrauding the alleged enterprise, we have laws for that. There is nothing more or less pernicious about fraud when it's an outsider and a third party. But it is when legitimate organizations become the tools of the criminal and thus enhance...
Isn't that my hypothetical? An entity which is about to decide the awarding of a contract isn't able to function because it has been supplied information that precludes them from having the discretion that they were.
It's been defrauded by an outsider. And again, there is a remedy for that. And it is not a RICO remedy. It's a fraud remedy. RICO has a unique place in the law of the United States. And just as outsiders defrauding an enterprise without more do not manage or control the operation of the enterprise, the district court opinion in Allstate versus Siegel, which looked at the Aetna case on which the Lockheed Martin case principally relied, put its finger on it. Fraud's fraud, but infiltration and corruption of legitimate enterprise is a different thing. And whereas Aetna is on the edge of RICO jurisprudence, it is. It's been criticized in other cases, and that's because in that case you really did have external actors defrauding an insurance company. At least there was an agent involved of the insurance companies who are appraisers, who are quasi-independent, but clearly the agents of the insurance company. So in that sense, because the insurance company relies on the integrity of their agents, and in the WSDOT situation, they're really arm's length parties. They rely on the integrity of the information.
What about the 11th Circuit case of Castro?
U.S. versus Castro, another case relied on by Lockheed Martin, and I think improperly so. And I think what the Lockheed Martin
because we'd have to find that was an improper analogy, right? I mean, because that they're the judges made the appointments, right? Just like
right.
WSDOT awards the contract.
Exactly, but the difference there that Lockheed Martin overlooked, and I think it's the critical difference, is that that's the bribery case. It's the classic case contemplated by Reeves, where the outsiders manipulate the process, the operation and management by bribing an insider. We don't have that here. And unless the court has more questions, I appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Your Honor. I may be out of time.
I don't know. Do you have any time? No, you're out of time, but we'll have. You may have 1 minute.
1 minute, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would simply like to say this about the two issues, Your Honor. I think that the Hemis case is very instructive in our present case. Counsel, in some respects, seemed to be questioning our standing, which I didn't necessarily see to be an issue on this appeal. But in any event, the truth of the matter is, assuming for the sake of argument the court accepts my opinion, my argument that we sufficiently, by saying Bowdoin rigged it, are entitled to the benefit of that allegation, the fact that they raised our bid and then just raise theirs up a little bit under, Your Honor, Hamas quite clearly says that if a cartel excludes someone from competition, that person has antitrust standing and antitrust injury. So I don't think that's an issue. The second thing, Your Honor, on RICO, I would simply say that the core function of the DOT is the bidding process, Your Honor. And I think the question really is, it's an interesting question, is a human being required on the inside or a bribe? I think that with modern technology, corrupting them for 7 years in a very corrupt industry is sufficient. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the fourth case.